second hour of We the People Radio. On Mother's Day, May 14th, 2023, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape will fix you up with the latest John Deere products. Go up and see them. They've got mowers, tractors, attachments. They've got it all. Now's the time of the year to get in there and get all your equipment needs fixed up for the summer. They got some good financing going on right now, so talk to them about that. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Did I tell you where they were? No, they're 3119
Twin View Boulevard.
That's right, in the city of Shasta Lake. Yeah. So go up and see them, or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And it's getting drier, so...
Yeah, so you're running out of time.
Yeah. Summer, hurry up and do
summer
that.
Summer is upon us.
Pay attention so we don't have, Mark doesn't have to fly on a bunch of local fires.
Yeah. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, the dunce who started the giant fire.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you were talking about the Forest Service, actually. Sorry.
Well, this was the result of the latest lawsuit from their own employees, by the way. And, you know, your alternative one is don't do any aerial fire retardant at all. And it was kind of interesting because when you get down in that table, the spreadsheet, if you will, for impact on species, impact on all federally listed species, well, no species or critical habitat would be directly affected by the use of aerial retardant because we wouldn't be doing that anymore. But they don't mention the ones that would burn up in the fire. So that apparently is not a genuine impact. It's, you know, and then they go to impact number two, which is do what we've always been doing. And there is more potential risk, but they don't outline that risk and they don't say who's at risk or how they're at risk or how many or what the risk would be. And then alternative three, the preferred alternative is there is less potential risk. Okay, so this goes back to the environmentalists and their game, and that is to have people just blindly accept the fact that if you do or don't do something, the environment's going to die, and we're all going to die, and everything's going to die, and you know that they, yeah, and so I just wanted, just kind of curious to know, what is the environmental impact of a destructive and out of control wildfire? Well, I happen to know that it is. The equivalent, every acre that burns in a catastrophic wildfire, the equivalent of that is 750 cars idling for a year.
Wow.
So when you get a fire like the Dixie, I don't know, what was that, 325,000 acres?
Oh, no, it was over a million.
Oh, okay. Well,
with related fires,
let's round it off. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll just say a million. And so that's 745 million cars idling for a year, which is more man-caused pollution than has ever occurred in the history of the Earth, including everything that's going on today. And then I remember it was funny because Doug asked me the last time I saw him, what is the greenhouse gas, what's the content of CO2 greenhouse gas in the atmosphere right now? It's like less than 1%. It's 0.02%. Or 0.04%, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so even if the United States quit emitting carbon altogether, just had no carbon emissions, even by their own calculations, the environmentalists' own calculations, we would only, the Earth would probably stop warming 0.02 degrees in the next 100 years.
Yeah.
So if the United States didn't even exist, global warming would slow down by 0.02 degrees over the next 100 years. And yet, you run around destroying people's lives, destroying their property. Because, look, here's the thing. Remember, we used to have an active logging industry, and the Forest Service used to manage property for balanced use. In other words, it was a mixed-use type of mission where you had logging, mining, you had... recreation, all of those things were managed so that everyone and every component of U.S. society had some interest in the forest and derived some benefit from federally managed land. And then the spotted owl, the fescue toad, the the yellow toad, the yellow-legged frog, and all the rest of them came into it, logging was stopped because of potential damage to those creatures. And then the wildfires really started. We haven't really managed timber in 100 years almost. So, you know, oh, you can't cut that tree down. Well, you might destroy the environment cutting the tree down. Well, what does burning the tree do?
See, that's the thing that I don't get is they stopped managing the forest because of the environmental impact, apparently. But now we just burn it to the ground and don't consider the environmental impact of that?
They actually think that is healthy. And there seems to be a big disconnect between, you know, the every 5 year fire that just kind of runs through and, you know, burns the grass, pops the seeds open, you know, just sort of cleans up the forest floor a little bit. And the one where we have 50 years of accumulated ladder fuels and the thing goes up like an A-bomb.
I mean, I have a friend that has a piece of volcanic glass that's literally topsoil that got so hot it melted into volcanic glass. And that's the result of a catastrophic wildfire in a forest that hasn't been managed in the last 50, 75 years. And look, there are only two ways to get fuel off the mountain. You're either going to burn it or you're going to mechanically thin it and make something out of it. So let's look at sequestering carbon, which is the goal of all of these guys. We need to sequester this carbon. And it does in a tree or in a plant. That's where carbon goes. And I don't know if these idiots know that plants ingest CO2, and then the byproduct of photosynthesis, something you learn about in grade school, is oxygen. So if you have a world that has no carbon dioxide in the air, well, guess what? All plant life will die immediately because all their food would be gone, oddly enough. And there would be no oxygen for us to breathe because the byproduct of photosynthesis is oxygen. So we must have carbon dioxide above certain levels, and we must have the oxygen that's produced by the plant. Well, how do you stop these fires then? You manage the forest mechanically, and you thin the overgrowth, and then you make stuff out of the wood so that that carbon isn't released back into the air immediately as it burns. And neglecting to do that means you're lighting up that forest, and all of the carbon that you're trying to keep out of the air is immediately released into the air, and in their own view, it's killing the planet. You can argue that till the cows come home, but it seems like they're at cross purposes with themselves, which is a common thing with crazy people, I think.
Well, it is the, you know, I thought the same thing. I still think the same thing with wolves and the rest of this stuff. Like, why doesn't anybody, same too with all the cartel grows and everything? Where are the animal rights people? I mean, they're busy having a fit about chicken, some chicken in a restaurant, and it's like, you're killing. I mean, look at all the cattle that died. I have a poem. Yeah. I have a poem. I'll post it. I'll post it later today on the site. But there's a poem written by a rancher up in Siskiyou County about the finding their cattle just terrorized and burned to death, huddled in at the edge of, you know, the place where they could get away, and died right there in the fire, just incinerated.
Gut-wrenching. I was on a fire where a guy lost 40 cows in the melee, and we went out and found them one at a time. Most of them burned to death.
Yeah.
And then they wanted us to shoot the ones that were too burned up to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, so you have a situational ethic here where you're micro-focused on this one aspect, and I don't believe that's altruistic. I think it's money and control-driven personally, but that's just my opinion. And the result of it is not good for anyone. We have to be able to either do these things, or we have to accept all of the consequences for not doing them. And if the people of the United States choose to accept the consequences for not putting fires out, then the people of the United States need to pay the people who are directly impacted by that decision. And that's something that seems to be missing from the equation. You have this fringe group of lunatics who are out to accomplish an agenda, and yet the consequences from that agenda are very specifically overlooked by those same people to the detriment of the rest of us. And we have to get to a point where there's either some balance here or where people just kind of start saying no to that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to play the crazy card.
Yeah, and I don't think I've heard any studies done on the animals that die in these fires, the bears, the deer, the, you know, right down to rabbits and squirrels and everything else. They can't get away. You know, some people say, oh, they can outrun the fire. No, they really don't. They don't know which way to go. They end up most times running right back into it. And like you were saying, if they're not killed by the fire, they're badly burned and die later. It's really a sad deal.
Well, Bill, here's how you confuse that issue. Once again, in the Forest Service's own table of alternatives, alternative one, don't use fire retardant ever again. Impact on federally listed species. No species or critical habitat directly affected by the use of aerial-delivered fire retardant, as no fire retardant would be used. But they don't address the impact on the habitat itself or the lives of the creatures involved. They're just saying, well, they wouldn't be hurt by the fire retardant because we wouldn't be using it anymore.
Jeez.
I mean, how numb
do you argue against that?
How cerebrally numb do you have to be to see that that is missing a few components that are probably important to the life of the animal?
Well, and that doesn't even take into account all the other things that live there. I mean, birds can only get away so far. They can only fly so fast. You have deer, you have just all sorts of stuff.
Well, and they can't repopulate that for
well, and they can't eat
for a long
time.
There's
no food. So
yeah,
they even if they live, they starve to death later.
Well, yeah, and then also, Bill, you mentioned a really good thing, the recovery process. When you look at the difference between the recovery process on managed land versus Forest Service land, which is literally unmanaged, I guess we could say, and you go up to find a section line that borders on a wildfire, like in the Six Rivers wildfire, where you have managed land that butts right up to a section line of Forest Service land. On the one side where you have managed timber ground, you have a beautiful mixed conifer forest like 15, 20 years after the fire that's 20, 25 feet high and is about ready to be thinned for the first of three thinnings prior to logging that forest. And then on the U.S. Forest Service side, it literally looks like the cracked surface of the moon, where you have burned up trees and dead snags and stumps and underbrush ready for the secondary burn.
Yeah.
Because, as Aaron said, the ladder fuel is the key to that. And if you don't manage that forest, all you're doing is setting up the campfire for the secondary burn, which is oftentimes worse than the primary burn.
Right.
Sure, because now the brush has really taken over. And it's
in amongst a bunch of dead, dry wood.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So you've got your perfect, you know, like we all learned in Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, you know, tinder, kindling, and fuel, right?
That's right.
You can't light a forest on fire if it's basically just fuel. You've got to have all the pieces, you know, and everybody knows you can't start, even a fire in a fireplace with just two big logs. You have to have some medium sized wood in there, and we're providing that. I don't think people who live outside of areas that are really heavily forested or in places that are really humid, you know, because there are a lot of places on the East Coast that are, they have ladder fuel up the yin yang, but they have 85% to 90% humidity in the summer, and so theirs isn't lighting on fire.
No, it just rots in a year from the moisture.
I mean, we have been on we've been on a couple of fires in northern Florida, but they're typically not like here. I mean, they're small, relatively easily dealt with, except for the peat bog fires. Those kind of go on and on. That's sort of the nature of a peat bog. The fire burns underground, and then it'll pop up 6 miles away from the ignition source. But they're not like fires we have here. The fires we have here are catastrophic. They're devastating. They're killing people. They're burning whole communities to the ground. They're devastating the resources the very resources that we need to keep this state out of fiscal catastrophe. I mean, remember, trees are growing all the time. It is a truly renewable resource. No one wants to cut down all the trees. But if you responsibly manage these forests, that's real money. It's not funny money. Every load of logs that goes down the road is the real money we need to keep out of financial trouble in this state. And the products that are produced from that sequester the carbon so that it doesn't go back into the atmosphere. And that's what people live in, sit on, eat off of. I mean, those products are products that we use and that we need every day.
Yeah, and without it, we're going to import it. Well, how's that going to work out?
We're already doing that. I mean, you look at Trinity County, which is Trinity and Del Norte County sit on some of the most high-value timber in the state of California because it's almost all Doug fir. And in Trinity County, they have one mill left. They used to have like 20 mills. Now they have one mill left, and guess where they have to buy their logs because they're not allowed to source them locally?
Canada.
Yeah, Canada. And I've been on I was on an exercise, a cop exercise, down the Sacramento River bottom one year, and there was a trainload of products, Canadian timber products, headed into California, and I forget what they called it. It was like canned lumber or canned timber or something like that, written all over the Tyvek that wrapped the finished wood products. Now, I have to ask you, and the guy I was standing there with, well, you know, the timber industry died on its own because of economics.
Oh my gosh.
That's absolute bull manure.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not.
How did you keep from losing it? We've got to take a quick break. I told you a couple of crazy songs, so you know we figured it was time to shift out of fire into insanity because obviously that's the point of this whole thing is just to embrace insanity, I guess. We'll be back with our guest, Mark Baird. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
This old man and me, we're at the bar and we're having us some beers and swapping out on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows. Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out.
I think it does make us crazy when we know too much.
Yeah.
You start looking at this and taking apart the pieces. And
you were talking about forest management, Mark, and it reminded me of an article I'd read several years ago about Mount St. Helens and the devastation that occurred. A lot of that ground that was destroyed was Forest Service ground, but a good chunk of it was Weyerhaeuser property. And they showed the difference between the Forest Service approach of letting it come back naturally and what what Weyerhaeuser did. They went in, replanted, and started managing their property. And I think it was 25 years later or whatever, they had a nice forest. And they were actually going in and starting to do first cutting, thinning, whereas the Forest Service ground was just a brushy, dead mess. And you would think with evidence like that that they would learn some lessons, but it doesn't seem that way.
You would really think, and you would kind of hope that the people who are tasked with managing, quote, managing our forests would actually manage them, and they just don't. I mean, you fly over some of the burns and you go into Montana, Wyoming, there are just, I mean, literally millions upon millions of dead bug trees. And, you know, even one of the Forest Service guys, I'm not going to name him, but I don't want him to get in trouble. I don't want to get in trouble for him. But he said, you know, we didn't approach this the way we should, and literally you can't give this stuff away now because once it's been in there a year or two, no one's going to log it. You have to pay them to come and take the trees out. You know, the time to do that is while the iron's hot. And these old timber fallers will tell the same story. They've been on fires before because the people who used to put out fires were the timber guys. And then they'd get in there, and sometimes they'd have to stomp the fire out to cut the tree down. I mean, and then they were hauling that tree to the mill and make something useful out of it. It's just, you know, it's just a different philosophy as far as the resources that we are blessed with and using those resources to help ourselves and our people and our economy and our culture and so on versus let it burn, let it burn, let it burn now.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you're absolutely right. These fires go through and burn down, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres of timber, you've basically got 12 to 18 months to get that wood out of there. It's still good. I mean, it burned the bark off, killed the tree, but you can still harvest that. I mean, it's a viable resource that belongs to the public. I mean, it's our timber, and they're letting it stand there and rot. And I mean, you're right. You can't really go back in and even replant when you have all this dead wood. It's just bug infested at that point, and nothing new will survive the infestation at that point. And I don't know. I think it borderlines on criminal that they're not at least going in and managing what's left and making, you know, getting some money back from what we lost, but to just let it, you know, rot is I think that's just as big a crime.
Well, it is criminal, and, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, we will be the authors of our own destruction. It won't come from without. It will come from within, and seemingly, at least in the Intermountain West, that's exactly what's happening over fish and, you know, a couple of species of frogs and an owl that admittedly, after the fact, they said, well, the spotted owl wasn't harmed by logging after all, but they don't go and reverse all of those policies. Then they say, well, it was really caused by the barred owl. So what's the next answer? Well, let's go shoot a bunch of barred owls. Well, it takes a real expert to know the difference between a spotted owl and a barred owl to begin with because they interbreed. So you have these failed policies, and then they double down with another failed policy, and then they'll cube it with a third failed policy, and in the end, the people who really suffer are the taxpayers, the property owners, the citizens, the people who try to live in these areas. I mean, just look at what happened now. You can't even get fire insurance.
Yeah.
Fires have been allowed to get so bad. I mean, we don't even have fire insurance. You can't get it. You might as well just let the house burn down and then build another house. It's the most ridiculous thing. And seemingly, unless people learn to vote differently, this will not change. I predict it will get worse and worse and worse until there is either a cataclysm that wakes people up at, literally at the cost of their own future, or nothing will change their mind and this society will get worse and worse and worse and worse until finally it's untenable and unlivable and we'll all be broke and we'll all leave.
Yeah.
Well, the brutal fact of it is that there are a lot of people who probably already changed the channel, thinking that this didn't have anything to do with them. I don't live in an area that's going to be impacted by a wildfire or whatever, but like so many of the topics that we cover here, bottom line is you're ultimately going to pay for it. That's the thing.
You will.
It might not come and burn your house down, but you,
right.
when there are billions of dollars over time going out to these communities, and so what are you going to say? Well, we're sorry, community, that you, incinerated and that your fire insurance doesn't cover it all and you can't rebuild your town with the resources in your small community, so you need help from the federal government, the state and the federal government. That comes out of everybody's wallet. So you're paying for it.
No,
you should care.
We're not talking about chump change either. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars.
It is
you get to the
ton of money.
Where these fire budgets are almost bottomless now. And it's a racket after a fashion, because if you would manage and if you do the preemptive things, that budget wouldn't have to be near as deep as it is now. And once you get one of these things started, you got to go try. I mean, you can't just let them go. So, and that is to put out one of these fires, or to even what the Forest Service calls, because they don't put out fires, they manage them.
Right.
To manage a fire that's catastrophic like that is a very, very, very expensive, dangerous for the people involved, risky proposition. It is, there is no good outcome. Once something like the Dixie Fire or the Fawn Fire gets away from you, and look at the Cap Canyon fire in New Mexico. That was a Forest Service prescribed burn that got away from them and burned several hundred thousand acres. I mean, once one of these things is loose, there is no human effort that can stop it. Human beings are incapable of stopping a fire like the Dixie Fire. It cannot be done. It's physically impossible.
No.
So what you end up doing is you retreat to a point where you think you can get it to slow down and deny it some fuel. And if there are two or three towns in the way, oh, well, I don't know what to say about that. And then you get to a point again where you can reduce the heat or reduce the amount of fuel, and you try to move the fire this way or that way, direct it where you need it to go so that eventually it burns itself out, or it won't kill as many people until the rain starts in the wintertime. Because I've been on several of these where we're in the cockpit talking, and so how long do you think this one will last? Oh, until November when it rains.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Dixie. I mean, it basically burned until the weather changed, and we got rain and snow, and it eventually put it out. But you're right, you can't put them out when they're that big.
Well, and then if they do get away with... all right, so put on your prognostication hat, and what do you think? You think they'll be successful in getting rid of the fire retardant?
Well, look, I think that the forces arrayed against the average guy in this country are extremely well-funded. They seem to have media attention where no one else can get any. They seem to command the courts, because the courts are staffed by extreme left-wing operatives. They're not judges who adjudicate the law. They're people who want to ensure a political outcome to any given case that comes in front of them. And you can look at the Manhattan DA as an example of that, and I could go on, as you know me, Aaron, I could go on with that for hours and hours. But I think that the average guy in the United States of America is facing a very steep uphill battle, and I quite frankly don't have a prognostication. I don't know that the average guy is capable of winning this fight, because our enemy is so well-funded and so well-entrenched in the agencies that literally control the government. And believe me, you're not electing those people. And even if you elect a conservative who has charge over those agencies, that person would find it terribly difficult, if not impossible, to replace the rank and file who are responsible for most of these poor decisions. You can replace the head of the agency, but you're not replacing number 345 through 5,000.
And
they're
people
that are doing this stuff.
Well, and you mentioned the Equal Access to Justice Act at the beginning.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about that on this program before, but I'm not sure that people fully grasp what that did or how that changed things. You want to hit that a little bit?
Well, EAJA was designed to give the average guy a way to sue the government if he was being subjugated or being scammed by the government itself. That was the intent of the EAJA, and it was a good thing. And you look at the Hage case. I mean, without EAJA, those people would have been screwed. They ended up screwed anyway, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it would have happened sooner.
However, the villains in this nation... are law firms that were formed literally by people who make a living suing the federal government. And because of the left-leaning principles that they adhere to, and a lot of government agents, former Black Bear Commune people and stuff, since they embrace those concepts on their own, this thing called Sue and Settle was born, where an environmental law firm who really represents no one but their own pocketbook finds a plaintiff. They sue the government over some stupid thing like the yellow-legged frog or something. And by the way, I was in a congressional hearing out in Tuolumne County years ago about that very thing because the Siskiyou Toad was wrapped up in that. And I called the Environmental Law Foundation. And it's really the environmental law firm, and I said, well, you know that the toads are being killed by some fungus that of unknown origin, and it has nothing to do with logging, camping, hiking, or fishing. Well, yeah, we know that, but we're suing because humans must have some impact on it.
Oh yeah.
And literally, their goal was to deny access to millions of acres of public lands to recreation, logging, mining, any human activity. Because even though they knew that this was not the cause of the death of this toad, human beings must have something to do with it, so we're going to sue anyway. Well, the government, their goal is to get stronger, get more people, have more employees, have a bigger budget. So they settle these lawsuits in a way that gives them what they want, which is a bigger budget, more employees, more control, more power. And that's where the concept Sue and Settle was born. Where the government gets sued, they fail to defend against the lawsuit properly and in any way whatsoever in most cases, and then the litigant gets paid some money and the government gets more control and more power over the people that they subjugate. And you live with more regulation, less choice, less access to the things that you've always had access to, like timber and recreation and hiking and things that you need or want. And in the end, that's how it goes, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And unless, if it's a civil suit of civil rights or something in the EAJA, you get, I think, $150 an hour for your lawyer. But there was a congressional mandate a long time ago that was passed that gives the environmental lawyers $700 an hour. So they're literally being handsomely paid to sue the government who does not defend itself, and the result is a crappier life for all the rest of us.
I believe that would be the windfall provision of some sort. Well, and Clinton was the one who opened that up so that the EAJA would apply to the environmental community and not just small municipalities and individuals trying to fight the big government. I mean, it was a good idea the way it was originally started, kind of like, the Endangered Species Act, right? Now started out okay and then went crazy.
Right.
But I guess you always have to figure it's going to go crazy eventually, so you should plan for that and not enact anything. And if it has a crazy curve it could take. We'll be right back. We've got to take a swift break. Our guest is Mark Baird. We're discussing the fire retardant bill that they want to ban fire retardant. So I guess the rest of the West can burn to the ground. You can find that on our website at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the price we pay in this treacherous game. It's a treacherous game. I won't be a
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Is your marijuana killing you? A testing of 1,000 NorCal dispensary samples found the majority had toxic mold or substances harmful to humans. As a bud tender, recommended THC products for treatment of medical conditions while you get sicker or exacerbate mental health issues. Get professional medical help and sue the dispensaries for the product and advice liability. Marijuana is not medicine for most Americans, and there's no medicine that is smoked. Remember, let's be careful out there.
If my party's all right, now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin, let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing, they might a deep freeze. It's casual entertainment, we aim to be.
That's right. We're not running out of anything in our deep freeze, are we?
No.
Spotted owls, you just stack it up. All right. What have we missed, Mark? What does the public need to know about this that they don't understand about flying on fire? Besides, like all of it, since everything you told us was new.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing for everybody, really, in most of these situations, is educate yourself. I mean, this is none of this stuff is a secret. It's all kind of commercially available, either online or through some meeting or some program that you can become familiar with. And you know, if you're curious as to how Forest Service manages your land, well, you're the people. You have a right to know it. And if you're curious as to how they use aviation assets, there are plenty of information sources online for retardants and Forest Service decision-making processes and how these things are arrived at, who's in charge, and who's doing what to who. You know, the information is certainly available. And as far as the aviation aspect of it goes, it's critical. I mean, we really have found ourselves in a position where we have to have this. I can't tell you how many fires I was on last year where there were no ground crews. I mean, the Wuhan virus decimated a lot of the ground crews. There are less people on the fires. The convict crews from a lot of the con camps aren't allowed to fight fire anymore.
Or they've closed them.
Yeah. And with AB 109 and Prop 47, these resources just aren't available anymore. And quite frankly, we're seeing far fewer ground firefighter personnel. In addition to that, they're having trouble attracting the right kind of people because, look, if you apply for a job as a wildland firefighter, you had better be tough and you had better be in good condition or you won't get the job, or either that or you won't last long in the job. And these are the types of jobs that young people, let's just say, they kind of steer clear of anymore. You know, if you can't work from home in your pajamas with your furry slippers on and your latte, most young people don't want that kind of job anymore. It takes a different breed of cat to want to fly one of these airplanes or want to do this ground firefighter job. And quite frankly, to get out on the ground in that wildfire with a Nomex suit, when it might be 135 degrees and you got to walk straight uphill for 3 miles with a Pulaski and a 40-pound day pack, dragging several rolls of 2-inch hose, you know, not just anybody wants that job and not just anybody could do that job. It is a tough job. And you're probably, well, you may not get rich at it, I'm just saying, and it is probably not going to do your health any good standing in the smoke. I mean, I can remember a couple of fires as a patrol officer, the weed fire when Angel Valley burned down, and by the way, if it wasn't for the aerial tankers, the rest of weed would have burned down too. I couldn't breathe right for about 2 years after that. And there was the McKinney fire downriver, same thing. We're on patrol down there clearing people out of their houses, doing evacuations, road control. It took me probably still can't breathe quite right after just walking around in that for 2 days. And some of those firefighters are in those fires for months on end, year after year.
Yeah, it's not not glamorous, that's for sure.
It's not glamorous work. It's a tough job. It probably doesn't pay as much as it should anyway, based on the type of risk and the work that you're doing. But we have to have these capabilities. We just have to, and particularly in light of the fact that for some reason people are adverse to managing the forest and they would just rather see it burn.
That's
how they vote.
There just is such a disconnect, I think, really, you know, and I've mentioned this before many, many times, but having lived on the East Coast and lived on the West Coast, when you look at the forests, they look very similar these days. And so when you talk about representatives in Congress, say, that are making laws and holding the Forest Service accountable, that sort of thing, it's difficult to explain to somebody who has really only lived in the East that the configuration of their forest, when they look at pictures of ours, they think, well, ours looks like that. You have to really factor in the humidity. And they don't. They don't think they factor in the moisture in those forests.
Right. Fuel moisture content and Haynes index and everything else comes into play. And you're right. I mean, and it is lawmakers that set this policy. They're undereducated. And I mean, really, how can you be educated in all things all the time?
True.
And the answer to that is you can't.
Well, and this has, you know, the other thing, I guess my other big pet peeve is that it, you know, it's one of those things where we started calling it a natural disaster. And I hope everyone who calls forest fires a natural disaster washes their mouth out with soap, because the liquid soap, by the way, that's much, much more powerful. And on Mother's Day, that seems like a fitting prescription here. Even though it was my dad that wielded the soap. But honestly, it's not a natural disaster. It's caused by bad policy.
And mismanagement.
Natural disasters are floods. I mean, sometimes that's caused by bad policy. You know, maybe they're not taking care of their levees and that kind of thing.
Volcanoes and earthquakes, though. Hurricanes. Those are natural disasters.
Yeah, right. Tornadoes, right? Except I did have a guy tell me that the wind farms actually were what were creating the tornadoes, because we don't have any wind farms in Mexico and Canada, and because we have wind farms on the West Coast, it causes the wind in Canada and Mexico to whip up, and that's what's causing the tornadoes.
Well, alrighty then.
Critical thinking.
And I just want you to know that I had to talk to that guy face to face, and I did not laugh. So,
That's an exercise of willpower right there.
It was too. It was really a test.
Like I said, I just think that people who do know and the people who vote, you need to study these things a little bit, because these aren't natural disasters, as you said. And we could stop them. And quite frankly, by thinning these forests mechanically with responsible management, the ground produces more water, too, because the watershed is not choked with growth. The tree spacing is more correct. A tree every 15 or 20 feet is about the right spacing, I believe, and I'm not a forester, but others could probably educate you better on that. But quite frankly, it causes the watershed to produce more water for fish and people and farmers and everybody else. So there is a lot of advantage to mechanically thinning these forests and managing them properly for the best use. And there is very little advantage to not doing so. In fact, the disadvantages are all on the other side of the spectrum, I would say.
Yeah.
And I just don't get it unless people absolutely have their heads up their backsides. And these environmental law firms are running the asylum, and all of us are locked up inside.
Kind of. And you know what I'll also do for the page on today's show is I'll add the programs that we've done with Ray Haupt up there in your area. He's a registered professional forester, worked for the Forest Service for, I don't know, 30 years or something, and he's done some terrific shows with us on fire and why the forest is burning down. And I think the biggest thing that the impression that he made is, you know, 100 years ago we invented Smokey the Bear and stopped, you know, started preventing you. Only you can prevent forest fires, right? So we started preventing fires but then we stopped managing 40 or 50 years ago. So you can't stop the fire and stop the management, and that's where we are. We stopped both.
No, and I think it was Ray that said, and I'm an expert on everything in an airplane, but he is the expert on forestry, and where I am clearly not. But I think he said it best, and I don't remember what venue we were in, but he said it would be the height of irresponsibility because the latest thing in the environmental toolbox now is fire adapted management.
Yes.
In other words, let it burn.
Yes.
And Ray said it is the height of irresponsibility to have failed to manage the forests all this time for the last 100 years, and then all of a sudden decide we're going to let it burn, because there is so much overgrowth and so much fuel and so much ladder fuel that it causes a result that is not only catastrophic, but it literally sterilizes the soil so that things have trouble coming back, and especially the plants that you want to come back. We have to start managing these forests actively and introduce fire to a managed forest so that, as you pointed out, because if the flame height is 2 feet or lower, it will typically roll through without killing the trees. It gets rid of the nasty stuff that you don't want, but saves the growth that you do want. But once you let that flame height get to 6, 8, 10 feet, and it starts affecting the trees, and then it crowns and goes into the canopy, Katie, bar the door. All you can do is do what we're trying to do now, which is, trying to save the horses after the barn door's been shut and the barn's on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard to do. I mean, all we're doing really is we're desperately trying to save people's lives and property, and we're marginally successful at it.
I did find, it's not the newest one we did, but we did do a show with him in August of 2021, and it's a thing we didn't address yet today, but the title of the show is Western Forest Fires, Climate Change or Bad Forest Policy, because that's the other thing. We get, it's inevitable, it's climate change. And that was solidly debunked in that program. So if you're harboring that notion, you might want to go and listen to somebody who actually is an expert on that. Same, too, with the geoengineering thing that, that's what's doing it. It's like, no, that's not what's doing it. It's really simple. It's bad forest policy.
It's bad forest policy. It's too much fuel and an ignition source. And on the right day, look out, because you're going to lose it. And I've been on many, many fires and heard traffic on the radio. All right, guys, well, it looks like we lost this one, so we're going to have to start a new set of plans. That's how it typically goes.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrifying?
It is. It isn't as terrifying for me, because I know I can fly back to an airport 100 miles from the fire. But it is pretty damn terrifying if you're sitting in your house and you can see a glow on the horizon and it's midnight.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know it's coming.
Yeah, how many times have you seen a fire double in size overnight? You know, you go to bed.
I look at the McKinney fire, and it grew 30,000 acres. It grew from literally hundreds of acres to 30,000 acres overnight.
Yeah, overnight. You wake up in the morning, and the thing is just atom bombed. And
you wake up in the morning, and for us, the term is it's gone. This fire has gotten away from us, and it's gone. And now we need a whole new set of plans and circumstances and application of resources, different resources altogether, in order to somehow get back ahead of this event, because it is beyond human control the way it is at the moment.
Yeah.
And that is a pretty scary thought, really.
When you fly on these, do you have a sense, like, do you have a sense early on, like, we're going to be able to get this one, or this one's just going to go away, or is it always just sort of a minute-to-minute thing?
You know, there are more than a few of them, and I don't want to get into too much detail, because there's an awful lot involved, and there are probably things that I don't know about that are involved as well. But there are a lot of them where, had they called us early enough, called enough resources early enough, we
sure
could have smashed the heck out of the thing, and it would have been over. And then there are even circumstances where people have gone to the managers and say, hey, let us go. We can get this thing right now. And the answer is, well, we have to wait for a resource order, and we don't have one yet. Now, like I said, there are probably circumstances that at my pay grade I'm not aware of. However, superficially, I could say there have been several in California that absolutely did not need to turn out the way they did.
Well, surprise. We're at the end of the hour. I was adding the fire shows. And just in case people really do want more on this topic, especially on the fire side and where we are, there's a tremendous amount of information. We hope you utilize the website. Mark, thank you so much for coming on with us. Enjoy Mother's Day with your lovely wife. Tell her we said hi. And you can find all of this later on, posted commercial-free at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
We wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good.